Coming to you live from a fogged out apartment somewhere in the United States, it's the TH Cinema Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the TH Cinema Podcast. My name is Dan, and with me, as always, is the Crimson Bands of Cytorak and Aya of Agamotto to my Flames of the Fault Line.
That does a lot of words.
Those are all Doctor Strange attacks.
Okay.
The Earth 616 and Earth 1610 to my Earth 2149.
Which one is this one?
It's this.
Okay.
Snort.
Hi.
Silent John.
Hello.
And Frank couldn't be here tonight. So we just finished smoking a lot of weed. And this episode, we're going to be seeing Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. Well, not like Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, like Benedict Cumberbatch in Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
So Doctor Strange, right?
Yeah. That's the tickets we bought.
I think so. I hope so.
Yeah.
So obviously, multiverse has a lot of potential. There's a lot that can happen. There's a lot to go through before we go see this film. But before we even start getting into that, we're going to do a little bit of the movie news. There wasn't a lot this week, but what there was of made me happy. And that was, firstly, that we finally got to see Daniel Radcliffe show up as Weird Al.
A jacked Weird Al, mind you.
God damn.
Was Weird Al jacked when he was younger? Like,
I don't have that perception of Weird Al in my head as being jacked when he was younger, but I also don't discount the fact that he could have been jacked in his younger Al days.
When I watched the trailer, after it was done, I went to, you know, see Reddit's opinion, as I always would, and they never lie about anything, certainly. But people claim that he used to be jacked, so I will take them at face value on that.
Who knew? Daniel Radcliffe did.
I'm really looking forward to this movie. I was a huge Weird Al fan because I was that weird fucking kid in middle school that had, you know, all the weird friends that didn't know what deodorant was yet and sat at the weird table at lunch. Like, I was that guy.
Oversized Venom button down shirts?
All the time.
Yes.
All the time.
Yeah.
And it wasn't oversized on me, buddy. Just right, Goldilocks style.
That's what I like to hear.
So Weird Al definitely has a special place in my heart growing up with him. And to see what they're going to be doing, it looks like it's going to be done well. I don't know how the fuck it's going to end up on Roku. Like, do fook?
Does everybody get a streaming service? When do we get our own streaming service? Everybody's doing it.
All right, be looking for that this fall. The TH Cinema Podcast streaming service available on probably no app fucking providers.
That was the thing that stuck out the most to me about that trailer. It's presented by Roku. A Roku original. Like, what?
Yeah, has Roku ever done... I've never seen anything Roku. Do they have stuff?
I'm sure they have stuff, but I never thought they had, like, stuff. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, stuff that needed a trailer.
They've never had pull like this, you know? I mean, having Daniel Radcliffe is kind of, for something like Roku, that's a big deal, I would think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the movie just got made and then it just got distributed and somebody bought the rights, you know?
Probably,
what I mean? Like, I don't
think
Roku had hands in this, but the fact that it's on Roku kind of also leads me to believe that maybe it's not as good as I'm hoping it's going to be.
Ooh.
Because it slid down the distributor slide on the way there.
Well, and I imagine it might be a tough sell to have a movie like this be put in theaters. I wouldn't think it would make a lot of money, and maybe that's something that they acknowledge, but they still want people to see it, so they're probably like, yeah, we'll give it away for so much money so we at least get something out of it. But I still think it's gonna be a great movie. I think it looks like a lot of fun personally.
Yeah, but in my head I just see like a Hulu executive with you know, the Pam and Tommy thing in one hand, the Weird Al thing in the other, and he goes, Pam and Tommy, and throws it out the window to Roku.
That seems accurate.
I don't know, Weird Al, he kind of like stands the test of time. He's been around for a long time, and I mean, most people know him, maybe not the newer generation. Because does he put out a lot of like parody stuff anymore?
Well, he did have that big like surge back in like, I want to say 2013, 2014 when he released his new album. There was a couple of days where he was releasing like one song a day on Twitter, essentially,
okay.
Like the new music video every day.
Gotcha.
And obviously his fan base was clamoring for it, but like it started to go a little mainstream for a couple of them and stuff like that because it was becoming such a big thing.
Huh.
Yeah, I'm not really a big Weird Al fan, like, at all. I just don't know anything about him, but I like a biopic, so I'm curious to learn about him.
Yeah, and he does have his hands in it. He helped write this movie, and he produced this movie, like, so that even more makes me, like, cautiously optimistic for it. I want it to be really good, but the fact that it slid down to Roku just makes me so worried that it's not going to be.
Like, somebody potentially saw some flaws that they just couldn't get over, and we'll probably get those flaws in this movie. And one vibe I did kind of get from the trailer, which would lead me to believe that you may be correct in that assessment, Dan, is it kind of felt like a TV movie, like just watching it. And I mean, where it's going to be presented is something that sells TVs. It's probably just going to be on any Roku TV. Almost not like, doesn't feel like Hallmarky, but it just feels like something you would catch, like a this series original movie kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, well, something that doesn't have that kind of Hallmark feel for me personally recently has been HBO's Summer Slate. I've been diving into in this little drought of movie season. I've been getting into the new season of Barry, which finally came back after like 2 years post-pandemic shit. Bill Hader, fucking fantastic work. I cannot recommend enough. The direction the third season is going into is probably one of the darkest shows I've ever seen, but still somehow relevant, makes you, you know, the anti-hero, you hope for him, but you could see this guy that they've built over two seasons of like you enjoying and you rooting for him, and they're at the point where they're making us stop, and I've never seen a show do that.
So he starts off on, you're on his side, and now they've completely just flipped it upside down.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Normally it would go the other way. That's intriguing, though.
Something like when Dexter came out on Showtime, mm-hmm. They never took that turn from like, okay, this guy, we don't like him anymore. We want him to get caught. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You were always cheering for this serial killer all the way through. And it feels really weird to watch a show where it's coming to a real place where you're like, all right, I'm really hoping this guy kind of gets his comeuppance.
Starting to question some of these decisions he's making. Dang. I'm a pretty big Bill Hader fan, and I know you've talked this show quite a bit to me, and I've seen nothing but positive things. So this is definitely something that I'll hopefully be checking out in the near future.
Yeah, and the show is written by, produced by, directed a couple episodes by Bill Hader as well. The guy's just an all-around thespian.
He's a very talented individual. I mean, as seen on SNL and everything he's done since.
Yeah, well, another talented individual I've been enjoying on HBO recently has been Colin Firth in The Staircase. The first three episodes of that came out this week, and I've gone through all of them. It's Toni Collette and Colin Firth in The Staircase, which is the true crime story of Michael Peterson's wife who fell down a staircase potentially, or did he murder her? And I know you guys are like watching the docuseries right now on Netflix, or just finished it.
Yeah, we started watching it when it came out, and then we just stopped halfway through. So now I want to watch this TV series. So we're going to go back and finish the docuseries first, though.
Well, I've got to tell you, the performance that Colin Firth puts out as Michael Peterson, it's got Emmy written all over it. Mm. Not since canceled Becoming Tommy Wiseau have I seen somebody melt into a character so deeply, like where it's hard to distinguish between him and the real person that he's portraying.
Dang, and that's a bold statement for there only being three episodes out. That makes me want to just instantly go home and start watching this.
I believe it, though. He's capable of that.
Yeah, additionally, like the way that it's shot, the progression of the episodes, and Toni Collette, just, you can't go wrong when you've got Toni Collette the mix.
I could gush about Toni Collette all day. I won't, but that is a big drawing factor for me. Seeing the crazy Toni Collette in Hereditary sells me on anything going forward with her in it.
Yeah, there's a scene in the end of the second episode where you see her fall down the stairs, and it's one of those long extended takes, mm-hmm. where it's just that still shot of just the staircase, just from the top of the stairs, and you see everything happening in the couple of minutes. You see her crying for help, you see her slipping in the blood and falling again and bashing her head again, like the entire way that the defense said that it happened, she portrays in this scene, and it's just so visceral to watch and so real and just amazing, amazingly well done show.
Okay, I'm excited to watch it.
And both of these are on HBO, correct?
Very much so.
This is probably going to solidify, but I think HBO might be my favorite streaming service. I tend to keep going back to it, and now I have two more reasons to do that.
Not like it ever left. So the other show that I finished up this week, I finished up Moon Knight in preparation for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. And I know you guys have finished up Moon Knight as well. Personally, I was a big fan of the show. I liked Oscar Isaacs a lot. I loved him switching between the characters. The costumes were great. I'm a big fan of the Egyptian mythology part of it all. And James Edward Olmos as the Khonshu, just so funny and so quippy. Such a quippy little dead bird.
I will give you that. He was a nice quippy, quirky little guy, or big guy. And you know what, Dan? This is tough for me because I've heard nothing but praise about it. You and I have talked about it a little bit. And this seems to have shot up to a lot of people's top Marvel show. And I just don't see it. I walked away very disappointed with Moon Knight. And it kind of sucks to feel that way. I mean, I had everything that I'm into. Oscar Isaac is brilliant and everything. Ethan Hawke is potentially one of the most underrated actors out there today. And it was, for me, not knowing anything about Moon Knight, I expected to learn a lot. And I did. But I'm still kind of like, after six episodes, like, what? What happened? I don't know. Snor, what do you think?
I feel pretty much the same. Like, I just thought it was okay. I don't know. Maybe it's just, like, not my thing. But I was hoping to like it a lot. And I just thought it was, like, a little cheesy and stuff. I don't know. I don't know. I'll watch another season of it, but I'm not excited for it.
Maybe me having, like, previous Moon Knight knowledge was able to, like, help me feed into my enjoyment of it. And I do see what you're saying. Six episodes is not a lot of time to put in a lot of lore. It's not a lot to build, you know, a connection with the character, especially when you're splitting this character across two characters.
Yeah.
I don't know. Personally, I gave a shit about Steven from the opening scene just because he's adorable and it's Oscar Isaacs and he's bumbling British. But I see what you're saying. Like, when they introduced, like, Mark, I was kind of like, who the fuck's this guy? What happened to my buddy Steven? So to be able to present that, and especially in six episodes of two characters going back and forth, it's really hard to gain an audience to actually care about what's going on. And then, you know, of course, ending it with a big monster fight is kind of like, big monster fight.
It's just what we've grown accustomed to. And the show was so unique that I was hoping for a different way to end something like this.
I mean, we didn't get the big sky portal with the beam of light, so.
See, and I thought that's one of the biggest parts of the show that I don't like is the monsters. Like, I just thought they looked really cheesy and, like, it just seemed like they didn't fit into the show, like, the way that they looked and everything. Another thing, I didn't love Oscar Isaac's accent. I didn't think it was very good. It just kind of, I don't know. I didn't think it was a great English accent.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. The monsters were definitely a little like Scorpion King looking, you know. Mm-hmm. And Oscar Isaacs is no Brendan Fraser. So there are high expectations in the mummy Egyptian action movie community. Yeah. I get it.
Brendan Fraser is slowly making a comeback. Could we get a Brendan Fraser role in the MCU?
I don't know. Well, he's in that DC show.
Everybody's crossing over nowadays. Yeah. It's fine. Nobody cares about that anymore.
I would be all in on a Brendan Fraser MCU appearance.
It's got to happen. Everybody else, I mean, we're only really waiting for Nick Cage to do it at this point, to reprise Ghost Rider. I think he would be the next one after Cage that I would want to end up in the MCU.
Could he play, because he's kind of like a big guy and stuff, you know? Could he play The Thing in Fantastic Four?
Oh my fucking God. Snort, I think you just changed my life.
I just about fell off the couch over here, honestly.
You're welcome.
Jim from The Office as Mr. Fantastic and Brendan Fraser as The Thing. Ooh, I like that. I like that a lot. I like that a lot.
And let me pull out our list of potential disappointments really fast and just pencil Brendan Fraser in.
Dang.
We need this, guys. Can we scream this every podcast? Brendan Fraser as The Thing.
Guys, I have no idea what's going to happen in this movie tonight. The likelihood of this happening is very small. But could you imagine if we saw Brendan Fraser as The Thing in this movie tonight? I would just die. Right there in my seat.
All right, but Moon Knight, with the six episodes, the idea wasn't to, like, start a new series. It's not to start a new Daredevil with a big arching storyline. Mm-hmm. It was kind of to introduce and do what Marvel used to call, like, a one-shot, where they would do this one little book, see how it sold, see how people liked it, and then take that character and start peppering them in other things, and then if they build off of that, it's like, proving territories for wrestling, you know what I mean? it's dark matches. This was their dark match. This was Moon Knight's dark match.
Just test the waters and see. Do we want to go forward, or do we just want to flick him into the movieverse of it all? I appreciate that, because like I said, the character I think is super cool and has tons and tons of potential. I do want more of it. It's not that I don't want to see more things fleshed out. I absolutely do. Like I said, I'm just a little jealous that I'm not on the hype train as everybody else right now.
Yeah, I think it definitely has potential. It's just going to take me a little bit longer to get there than apparently everybody else that watched this show, because everyone loved it.
Yeah, and especially coming off of Disney Plus's track record of putting out really good Marvel shows. Hawkeye was fantastic. WandaVision, Loki, like everything has been like a major hit. So I feel where you're coming from. Like, oh, this one didn't taste as good. I went to the same restaurant. I ordered something similar to the thing I got last time, and it just tasted like crap.
It just makes you sad. But you won't give up. You'll give them another shot.
No, you're going back to that drive-thru. You're going back to Taco Bell. But the potential for what Marvel's building with the multiverse that we're going to be seeing tonight is something I'm very excited for, Moon Knight included or not. Okay, so this movie has been a long time coming. This movie was announced pre-pandemic. It was supposed to come out before WandaVision. It's coming out now, after WandaVision, after like 2 years of waiting in the wings.
Full of reshoot.
Full of everything. They must have changed so much. I'm very worried that this movie's not going to, as much as I want it to be really good, I was thinking about it a lot this week, and I'm, same thing with the Weird Al, you know, Roku thing.
Yeah.
There are things that are making me nervous about this movie. I've seen good reviews from my friends who saw it on opening night online, who are big comic book fans, so I have faith. But I have also seen bad reviews from my friends who are comic book fans, so I have lost a little bit of it.
Do you think maybe it's like, since it just kept getting pushed back and stuff, that they just like put it out, just get it over with? Is that the vibe that you think it might be?
That's what I'm thinking. I think it has to happen. I don't think it happened the way that they wanted it to. It's kind of like if you sit there and you like prepare for your presentation over and over again to go give a presentation in front of 1,000 people, and then you go up there and you just fucking flub it. And you can prepare for it all you want, but...
Well, and Marvel has that track record of planning things out, you know, for 10 years at a time, and they've proven to knock it out of the park pretty consistently. And so they clearly had a plan with all this, and then, you know, the pandemic happens and kind of does that thing. It shuffles all their notes, and now what do we do, guys? It almost feels like this is just like a watered down version of like Spider-Man. Like, the hype was unreal for Spider-Man. The possibilities were endless. Who's going to show up? Who are we going to see? And we have that same narrative with Doctor Strange on a different scope. Obviously, people get more hyped for all the Spider-Man, whereas this one is just like, well, who are they going to introduce? You're cracking the multiverse wide open. Who do we have? And then you hear all the reshoots and things of that nature, and it kind of makes you worried that they are going to do too much. I think my biggest concern is this movie is going to end up being less about Doctor Strange than it is about anybody else who might appear in this movie.
Well, and think too, since Endgame, what, there's been Black Widow, Internals, and Spider-Man. Obviously, Spider-Man was huge, but Black Widow and Internals, like, those didn't hit, so I don't know.
Yeah, and those ones were also same thing, victim of the pandemic. I never expected Eternals to hit, just because, like, I don't know why they even thought that was going to be a good idea.
Yeah, I don't know, and it sucks because, sure, we're clearly going to get more of them, I would assume, right?
Yeah.
I don't need it, though.
Except that Harry Styles.
I don't know, they could have put that whole show in a Moon Knight miniseries, and I would have been fine.
Moon Knight should have been a movie, whereas Eternals should have been a show. That's, we should have flipped this.
100%.
Because yeah. It kind of feels like the only reason they did Eternals was to introduce Harry Styles on the big screen. Congrats, Snort, you win.
Disney did that just for you.
Thank you.
So the movie does have a lot of potential to fail. It also does have a lot of potential to be good. The trailer that I did see before I went on Media Blackout did look good. It looks like it's going to be a standard Marvel movie plus three, maybe. And it's not going to be an Endgame. It's not going to be a Spider-Man No Way Home, but it's not going to be Black Widow.
Well, and I think one thing this movie has going for it is the return of Sam Raimi. That alone would entice me, even if I thought the trailer was the worst thing I'd ever seen. It's been a while since he's directed anything, hasn't it?
Mm.
Did he work on the Ash vs. Evil Dead show?
He's done work here and there.
Has he?
Yeah.
I guess I just haven't seen anything of his recently.
Yeah, I mean, Raimi had a very like long history of movies, and then he did all the Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then he had Drag Me to Hell came out, and then he pretty much kind of dropped off after Oz. And he hasn't really done stuff. He's attached his name to a lot of production and stuff like that, because that's what he's gone to. But this is going to be his first foray back into features in almost a decade at this point. And I don't know, Raimi's always had an ability, like even when he picked back up Drag Me to Hell.
Yeah.
It had been decades since he'd done a horror movie at that point. And that was probably one of my favorite horror movies of that decade, honestly.
Well, and he showed that he still had it in him. A lot of those directors can potentially lose touch over time, but he didn't.
So, yeah, I'm hoping we get Spider-Man 1, Spider-Man 2, Sam Raimi, and not Spider-Man 3, Sam Raimi.
I don't think Spider-Man 3 is entirely his fault. I think there were some creative differences.
Yeah, there was a lot going on in that movie, too.
I don't disagree, but I won't put all the blame on his shoulder.
But it is also the 20th anniversary of the original Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire releasing that Sam Raimi originally directed. The kickoff of the MCU now, canonically,
right.
20 years ago with this man. So he's going to have his shot tonight with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. And there's so much that can happen in this movie that the possibilities of the multiverse are endless. We've seen what it kind of looks like with Loki, with variants and stuff like that. They're pulling in stuff from the What If cartoon series into this. Like, this is one of those movies where you had to do your homework. You really had to do your homework on this one. All right. I know Spider-Man Spider-Man No Way Home, you had to watch all the Spider-Mans and get, you know, so you can get everything. This is one that you have to watch from Raimi to Raimi to get everything that's going to be happening.
That's why I'm worried about it for me. I'm like a very casual, loose Marvel fan. So like if people pop up and stuff that are like mainly just from the comics and everything, like I'm probably not going to know who the heck this person is. So I don't know how exciting it's going to be for me.
Well, that's okay, because we're going to be doing a little intro right now, because we're going to be doing Vegas betting odds on who's going to be showing up in this movie.
Okay.
Okay. So at 1-to-1 odds, because I've seen a trailer, fuck you, Disney, Patrick Stewart as Charles Xavier.
Yeah, duh.
I'd put my life savings on that one.
And because of the place where that's taking place, I'm going to do 1-to-2 odds on Mr. Fantastic showing up. I'm going to do 1-to-2 odds on Namor. No, I'll do 1-to-4 on Namor showing up. And I'm going to do, I don't know how they're going to do that. I'm going to do 1-to-10 on Black Bolt showing up from the Marvel ABC Disney series where Black Bolt was in it.
What show?
The Inhumans. Oh. There was a 1-season series on Disney called The Inhumans, and Black Bolt was one of the characters in there, and he's on the Illuminati as well. Mm. So that's the Illuminati chairs. So you've got Mr. Fantastic, obviously, of the Fantastic Four universe. We've seen him twice in movies. They're probably going to do it if they do it with a brand new actor, because they're going to want to reboot that.
Yeah.
You've got Namor, who we've never seen in a movie yet, but kind of has been kind of hinted, referenced. So it could be from this multiverse, could be from another multiverse, but we could get potentially an actor being, you know, named essentially as Namor,
right?
Who's the Submariner who lives underwater, and he's in Atlantean.
Similar to Aquaman.
Yes, that's Marvel's Aquaman.
Okay, cool.
And then, like I said, Black Bolt, who was in the ABC Inhumans show, 1-to-10 odds. He's just a, like, Eternals type being that lives on the moon, and when he speaks, his voice makes people's heads explode.
Mm, interesting.
And he's got this, there's a giant dog named Lockjaw that can teleport.
Weird. Okay. Well, I know who you, at least I think I know who you think is going to be Mr. Fantastic, but is there people that are like connected to these characters already, or do you have a dream casting for them, or does the internet have a dream casting?
Not really. I think we're just all waiting to see where it goes on this one.
Okay.
Like Namor has not really been talked about as like a dream casting person aside from like young Jeff Goldblum. Telling you, 1994 Jeff Goldblum, that's Namor.
Prime Namor.
But outside of that, I mean, so we're going to go into the next level of odds, which is the portal people. Mm-hmm. So these are just people who are going to be showing up potentially. Mm. I'm going to give 1-to-10 odds also to like Vision showing up.
Yeah.
Or at least White Vision from the WandaVision series. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give 1-to-20 odds on a mutant, any mutant. I'm talking Deadpool, outside of Professor Xavier, because we know he's going to be there. I'm talking Deadpool. I'm talking Wolverine. I'm going to give it like 1-to-18 on Wolverine. Okay. Of being that person. Like, come on, Radcliffe.
Yeah. See, I think it's like, I put it like 1-to-5 for Deadpool. I don't know why. I just have a strong feeling he's going to be in this.
You just think Reynolds is just going to break through the fourth wall?
Yeah.
Well, and I think we're all just kind of waiting for the inevitable. He's going to show up. But yeah, we've been counting this down for a while now since they finally gotten their hands on having the rights to using him.
Are we seeing any Spider-Man tonight?
We might get a Holland cameo, potentially, because, I mean, the spell was what caused all this to happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming we'll get a Tom Holland cameo. I'll do 1-to-3 on Spider-Man. Tom Holland.
1-to-3?
1-to-3. And let's see, I'll do 1-to-6 on Spider-Man number 3 and 1-to-100 on Spider-Man number 2, because God knows Toby's not showing up for anything. He got his paycheck. He can go play poker again.
Can we just throw Bruce Campbell into the same Professor X odds? Because you know he's going to be in this, right?
Oh yeah, Bruce Campbell's going to be in it. If Bruce Campbell's not Mysterio, I'm going to fucking lose my shit. We lost the Mysterio. We need another Mysterio. No one better than the Bruce.
You think they go that bold in this
movie?
Oh
no. Okay, fixed it. Bruce Campbell's going to be the new Black Bolt. He's old. You can put him in a mask and all he's got to do is just scream and like chin around a little bit.
I don't know anything about Black Bolt, but if it gives us a reason for us to have him in the MCU, fuck it. I'm down.
And then I'm going to go, as much as I tried to manifest, I'm going to go like 1-to-50 on Ghost Rider.
I'm not feeling so strong on this one as much as I'd like to as well.
The fact that we didn't get a Benedict Cumberbatch spoiler-free PSA come out from him, I don't think maybe as much is happening in this as we thought there was potential to.
That was another piece that I was like, this might not be as good as I'm hoping it's going to be, or as like revealing as I'm hoping it's going to be, is the fact that we didn't get that spoiler warning to come out prior to the movie.
Yeah.
You know?
I still think major things are going to happen because there's definitely those expectations, but yeah, we should probably temper them just a tad bit compared to our pre-Spider-Man hype.
All right, guys. Well, let's get fucking strange.
Ooh.
My favorite.
And go see fucking Strange.
Yeah. And the Witch.
And the Scarlet Witch. All right, guys. It's the multiverse, yo.
We out.
Womp womp.
See ya.
And now, our feature presentation.
John and Snork got the tickets. I got the snacks, and we're back. And we just watched Doctor Strange, the Multiverse of Madness.
Yeah, and the multiverse of three eyes on everybody.
All right, so we did just get back from the film, so there will be spoilers after this point. If you don't want to listen to the spoilers, pause the fucking episode, pick it up after you watch the movie tomorrow or 4 months from now, whatever. But there will be spoilers. This is your warning, one and only.
Let it rip, tater chip.
All right, so the Multiverse of Madness, which should have been kind of called the Multiverse of Grief and Commitment Issues for the most part. They were trying to push an emotional feeling of the movie, mm-hmm. but it didn't hit as hard as like an Infinity War did or anything like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like even the stakes that were raised and were shown that the stakes were high in things didn't hit like most Marvel movies did. Okay, I tranched this movie off into three sections. For a Marvel movie, it was all right, you know? For a Doctor Strange movie, it was pretty good for a Doctor Strange movie. But for a Sam Raimi movie, it was fucking great.
Oh, 100%. You could watch this movie and instantly pick up when it was Marvel kind of doing their thing and when Raimi was doing his thing. And if we had a movie in which it was only Raimi doing his thing, could be in the top three for me out of all the Marvel movies. What he does, his style is still so strong. And it was kind of insane to see a Marvel movie so bloody, so gory, so violent. Dare it be the most violent Marvel movie thus far?
Yeah, I don't think that Doctor Strange was really the proper property for Raimi to be Raimi'd.
Yeah.
I'm sure that there are a lot of other, like if you had held on to Raimi until the new Blade movie comes out, or, you know, give him a Venom movie, even though I know you really can't because he already tried it once and we don't want to do that again. But I don't think Doctor Strange was the right property for it, but I definitely loved all the Raimi-ness of this movie, even outside of the plot and everything else. It just made me appreciate him again like I used to when I was a kid. I was a big Evil Dead fan as a kid. Mm. I love my old schlocky horror movies. I love my Army of Darknesses, Chainsaw Hands and Deadites. Fuck yeah. And I loved seeing Raimi doing what Raimi does.
Well, and that's the thing is if you're a fan of any of those things, you will get so giddy during this movie. So giddy. And I really hope this is kind of a comeback of sorts for Sam Raimi. I really do. He, in my opinion, hasn't lost a step at all. And I am craving something that's his specifically, where he doesn't have any outside involvement.
I did have that Kool-Aid smile plastered on my face throughout the entire film, just enjoying and taking in everything he was doing. And my sole thought was, God, give this man a horror movie again, please. Give him something good. Not even like a remake of his own property. Let him do something he wants to do, because he'll do it great.
I don't really know any of his movies except for Spider-Man, so that's all I have to compare it to. But your breakdown for like a Marvel and Doctor Strange movie, I agree with.
Well, as we go through the plot, we'll point out the Raimi-ness bits mm-hmm. that we remember after we've gone and watched a 2.5-hour movie and gotten high. As best as we can for both you and the listeners. So the movie starts off with some high stakes. You've got Doctor Strange and America Chavez kind of running through a twisted dimension to get to the Book of Ashanti, which is a classic Doctor Strange bit. And you find out that that's not the one Doctor Strange, that's just a different Doctor Strange. They are trying to escape from some fucking big monster that's trying to get to the book and steal America Chavez's powers so that it can jump through the multiverse, so that it can do whatever the fuck it wants to do as an evil thing. So America Chavez gets thrown back through the multiverse, and she ends up in the lap of our Doctor Strange, our 616 Doctor Strange.
And I think this debut of America Chavez is done so well, because this is a character I knew nothing about going into it, and you don't get a lot, but you can instantly tell like how impactful and powerful of a character she is. So I really appreciated like seeing her kind of like in her element and doing what she can do so early on in this movie. Not like here's this character, she kind of toys with her abilities, she figured it out. It's like, no, she's just fucking boom, let's go.
Yeah, but she doesn't know how to trigger him. It just happens. But when it happens, it's at full strength. It's just boom.
Zero to 100.
And she has no control like over it. So who knows what's going to happen, but something is.
Yeah. And in a lot of movies, they would have just been like, okay, and this is going to be the montage. We're going to end up teaching you how to control your abilities. Exactly. They don't even get to that until after everything's resolved, which I really appreciated. It's just like, okay, this thing just keeps jumping us through dimensions. We're just going to keep dragging it along with us and until we can figure out how to fix it. Like she was less of a character, like a partner in the movie mm-hmm. and more of like the Maltese Falcon itself. You know what I mean? Like she was the object that they were trying to secure and use its powers to make the movie plots move along.
Yeah. I think if you get that like kind of sequence or montage of her like learning the powers, you're just tacking on like 20, 30 minutes that you don't need to this movie. I don't see where that would even fit in, honestly.
Yeah, and you also involve the fact that if she did learn her powers in the first act, second act, there's no third act or second act after that, because biggest power set in the universe.
Right.
But so Doctor Strange is at his ex-girlfriend's wedding. It's awkward, it's funny, whatever. Sam Raimi, he does weddings a lot in his movies. Like, I noticed that's a Raimi thing, weddings.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Not like a lot in his movies, but he does like to use like that certain church in New York that's across from 30 Rock and shoot his little weddings there and stuff. But
is that the same place Mary Jane got married to?
Yep, same place Mary Jane got married, same place Fantastic Four got married.
I was trying to figure out why it looked familiar. I was like, this is kind of Spider-Man.
So Doctor Strange is at this wedding and monster's chasing America Chavez, and it's this big tentacly monster rolling around all full of suckers.
It's just the all-seeing octopus. That's all it is.
It's the everything octopus. So this was the one little piece that I got spoiled for me in advance because of my stupid Marvel video game. Because when I did see this thing in the trailer, I did think it was going to be Shuma Gorath, which is a big villain in the Doctor Strange universe. And I thought that's what they were going to be leading to. But then a couple days ago, I got an update on my game for a new character, and it's Gigantor. And when I saw the name Gigantor, I was like, okay, this thing's going to be in the movie for all of 48 seconds.
And what a way to get spoiled. That's the last place I think I would have expected spoilers. You would think they would have waited a couple weeks to introduce that new of a character.
Well, there was a big thing when Civil War came out. Avengers Civil War came out, and they didn't show Ant-Man turning into Giant Man in any of the trailers.
Right.
And then they released the Funko Pop of Giant Man like 2 weeks before the movie came out. And that was supposed to be a big moment, and everyone was really upset about it. But it's even more dick because you're spoiling stuff to people who are already nerds. Like, spoil stuff to the normies. Why don't you put that shit on Good Morning America? I'm not gonna watch that. I will actively avoid that.
Right.
Don't put the spoilers in nerd culture before the movie comes out, people.
I feel like there's a couple instances with Funko Pops where they ruin some potentially huge aspects to a lot of their movies back when Funkos were, I guess, at their peak of popularity.
Yeah, Funko's done it. Lego's done it a couple times. Mm-hmm. Marvel Puzzle Quest, this isn't their first rodeo in this either.
You're just not safe anywhere anymore when it comes to Marvel spoilers.
Disney can put as many fake shots and trailers as they want, but goddamn it, little toys are gonna spoil shit.
People gotta make money, man. They gotta sell the toys.
But so Doctor Strange goes and Wong shows up to come help him. And I just want to give a little bit of appreciation for him in this movie because he's always fantastic, but I loved seeing him in a bigger role. And he was fun in it. He's always fun.
Yeah, he was one of my favorite parts of the whole movie, honestly.
Yeah, and I think that transcends every movie he's been in. He's always a fun little bit. I always enjoy when he's on screen.
Yeah, and so they're fighting the not Shuma Gorath thing, and they kill it in very Sam Raimi fashion by driving a stake through its eye and yanking its eyeball out onto the street. That's a very Sam Raimi, like the high level of gore type stuff is very Sam Raimi. Like there's a specific shot in Evil Dead where an eyeball gets like shot out of one Deadite's face when his head gets exploded, and it flies through the air into somebody's mouth, and it's the old trick where like they did the shot in reverse and it was in his mouth already, and he was like, and he stuck it out.
Huh. Yeah, when the eyeball came out, I was like, whoa, dang. I feel like I haven't seen something like this before in a Marvel movie.
Yeah, and there was a lot of that in this, to be honest. There was a lot of extra gore, and we'll get into it once we get to the Illuminati scene. But for a PG-13 Marvel movie, it was very gory, but they also did the Mortal Kombat trick of, you know, changing the blood color from red to green for the Super Nintendo version. There was a lot of oil blood.
But at least in that moment, too, it kind of solidified that they were going to let him do his thing pretty early on. Once we saw that scene, I was just like, I'm not as worried about Marvel kind of making him scale it back as much anymore.
Yeah, he's not reeling in the Raiminess anymore like he was during the Spider-Man era.
It got me more excited, I think, than I was before the movie started.
So Wong and Strange end up saving America Chavez from the thing by pulling its eye out. They go to the Sanctum Sanctorum. We get a little bit of backstory, yada, yada, yada. There's another Stephen Strange that's dead. They bury him. I wonder if that's going to come up again. Literally and figuratively. But they ultimately decide that they need to move this girl because of her powers. They need to move her to the most secure location, which is the Temple of the Doctor Stranges, whatever it's called. But they also need the help of the Scarlet Witch. So Strange goes to Wanda's house that we see at the end of WandaVision during their end of credits. And he's talking to her and like, oh, you know, she's just trying to take everything easy. She just kind of brainwashed a town of 5,000 people. She's just trying to take, you know, a little time to herself. But she's not. not, because we find out that Wanda is the villain in this movie, which I think that was a really good reveal. I didn't expect like that. I expected a corruption turn. I didn't expect her to be the main antagonist throughout the entire film.
Yeah, that really, really surprised me about this movie, because yeah, I thought she was like, they were gonna fight and stuff, but she's gonna turn back into an Avenger and everyone saves the day together. But no.
Yeah, I don't think there's any coming back, because this was full-on gloves off Wanda.
Yeah,
people are dead. The president is writing notes to somebody's family somewhere. She wasn't holding back. And that's why I'm saying, like, this was kind of like the Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Grief. It was all about her loss again, same as WandaVision. It was all about her loss, and she just wanted her kids back. And it was about doing anything to get that.
I mean, this movie was really just a tragic telling of motherhood in the long run. She was trying to get the kids that were hers, but not hers at the same time. And I didn't, to touch on what you guys were saying, I didn't love at first her being revealed as the main villain, because I thought, okay, she's going to be villain-esque in the beginning, and then eventually, oh, she's good again, and then we're going to both fight the big bad. But as we will talk about going forward, and we get to where she takes us, I'm very happy that's the route they went with her being the main villain.
But Doctor Strange, unaware that she's the main villain, gives up the information of where America Chavez is, basically like, okay, you're going to turn into the bad guy, but this is where the thing that you need is. So she goes and she attacks this monastery where all the Doctor Stranges are, and just straight up fucking wrecks them.
Like, kills almost everyone.
Yeah, I did really like the portrayal of her powers during this scene, like the way that she was getting into people's heads. Like, I know they did that a little bit during the Avengers Age of Ultron also.
Yeah.
And they kind of haven't done that since, but there was a lot of going into people's, like, into people's heads and the metaphysical aspect of it. And like, when she got that kid, that one kid, that's all she needed, that one kid to lose his shit. I know which one of you, yeah. One of you's gonna fucking go in. That was it. And she can get through the shield and she can start fucking everybody up. But as this is all going on, and as Wanda's attacking everybody, America Chavez's powers manifest, because she's terrified, and that's when her powers manifest. And her and Doctor Strange get sucked through a portal to another multiverse, and they do a nice little sequence of them like traveling through the multiverses every time they do. Well, not every time, but like a couple of times throughout the movie, yeah. They do. And I really liked that. I loved them swinging through all the different realities, turning into cartoons. There was a film grain over it at some point.
The paint one, that was my favorite one.
I wanted to possibly eat psychedelics to see this. I'm kind of glad I didn't. I don't think that it would have been as good as I wanted it to be, but those scenes right there would have blown my mind.
Yeah, that scene was one of two of my favorite scenes. It was, I mean, we kind of saw stuff like this and Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Marvel did just as good of a job in this scene, like going through all these different oddball places. I thought it was very, very well done.
Yeah, so they end up in New York of the future of the present, which is like this utopian society with all the buildings covered in plants and food is free, or is it? And we get one of my favorite scenes, because it's one of my favorite people, Mr. Bruce Campbell, pizza popper vendor.
We were all just waiting for this.
He didn't turn into Mysterio, but he did turn into Ash for a few minutes when he beat himself in the face. Bruce Campbell can beat himself up better than any man. I would love to see a fight where him and Jim Carrey are just in the ring together, but they're just beating themselves up the entire time.
To see who sells it the best.
Yeah, who gets the slapstick award.
Man, see, and I feel like Jim Carrey would be more like over the top, but even watching him do this to himself in this movie, I feel like he's got a little bit of a pro wrestler in him. He sells very well, and I mean, he's the one kicking his own ass. So I feel like my money might be on him.
The difference is, I think Jim Carrey at this point, he would be above that. Bruce Campbell, he's still shelling out. He's going for it, man. He don't give a fuck.
Jim Carrey just scoffs at something like that. Bruce Campbell, like, where do I sign?
Hey, Sam, I'll do anything for you, buddy. I got you. So they decide in this multiverse that they're going to go and talk to the Doctor Strange of this multiverse so they can formulate a plan to defeat the Wanda from coming through, because Wanda's got the Book of the Dead, the Harbinger. What was it called?
The most metal book of all time. I don't know.
The evil book.
I got it. Because Wanda's got the Necronomicon Ex Mortis. Sam Raimi and his fucking evil books, man. Tick. Raimi. So they go and talk to the other Doctor Strange, and that Doctor Strange is dead. But who shows up? It's Mordo. Hi, Mordo. So Mordo was kind of like the villain from the first one. Well, he was like the buddy that turned into the villain. He was the reverse what we thought Wanda was going to do. And I do like me some Chiwetel Ejiofor.
I'm very impressed by you being able to pull that out.
So I liked his inclusion in this movie, but it also leaves the option for him to still be evil in the original 616 universe.
Oh, that's a good
point. So we get him back at some point also.
Mm, yeah.
And we also get him meeting with Rachel McAdams after Chiwetel Ejiofor kidnaps Doctor Strange and America Chavez. Rachel McAdams comes back into the equation, and she confirms that the universe that we're watching in the MCU is Earth 616, mm-hmm. which is the first time that it's actually been legitimately referred to as such in the MCU.
A lot of speculation. It's nice to finally have the confirmation.
Finally got some closure. But during all of this, Wanda's using the Book of the Dead to kind of like dreamwalk, which is kind of like take over and possess the person in another multiverse. So she possesses the Wanda over there, and that Wanda runs over to where Chiwetel Ejiofor is and starts attacking it. While this is all going on, Mordo's taken Doctor Strange down to the basement because he needs to meet with the Illuminati.
I think it might be time to check the betting odds.
All right, so let's knock it out. So our first reveal, we get none other than Captain Carter.
She might have been one of my favorite ones. She just always randomly pops up, and this was her, like, at her most badass.
I loved her in this. I thought she was awesome.
So fun fact about that character, my stupid game that spoiled me on the character's name this week actually created that character. They put out a variant in their game. One of the characters was Captain Carter.
Oh.
And then the What If TV series put her in the cartoon, and now she's canonically in the MCU in another multiverse. But it all came from the Marvel Puzzle Quest game.
That's pretty crazy, really.
Oh, and that's just fun too, because then it just cracks open this Marvel Life multiverse that they'll just pull whatever from wherever.
Yeah, good ideas, man. But so then we get, after Captain Carter's revealed, I'm going to end up confusing the order.
Mm-hmm.
We get the Black Bolt.
Yes.
Which is the original guy from the Inhuman show. He doesn't say much.
Well,
thankfully.
A man of few words.
Yeah, they could have gotten Pattinson if they wanted some good stares, but they got the guy from the Inhumans TV show.
I mean, I can't speak about him because I haven't watched the show, but I mean, in little to no dialogue, I feel like he did his job well.
And then we get another fun little reveal. Mr. Jim Krasinski jumps in, full of fours. Mr. Fantastic.
The moment finally happened.
It did. He looked good up there, but it kind of felt like, you know how they say never meet your heroes?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Do you guys have the same feeling with it?
I do a little. All I see is Jim. Like, all I hear is Jim. Like, I can't get past it at all. Maybe if it was like a full movie, maybe, but like just in this moment, my heart wasn't as excited as I thought it would be.
I'm completely the same way. I hope that when he gets surrounded by Brendan Fraser and two other people, that it'll hit land a little bit more if that does happen.
Yeah. Well, and maybe that's what it is. If he is in a full blown Fantastic Four movie, it gives you enough time to maybe shake the Jim stigma. But I mean, him not being in this very long, yeah, my mind's just office. The whole time. And it's not that he was bad. Like, there was nothing wrong with it. It made me very happy. This is one of the things I got spoiled by ahead of time. And I still loved it happening in the theater. But man, he had that Jim look on his face. I was waiting for the pan to the camera.
I'm really curious, since we've been doing media blackout, so we didn't try not to get super spoiled for this movie. I am curious to go online and see, like, if other people have our same feelings.
See if it's mutual with the internet.
Yeah. I need validated in this.
After Jim Krasinski as Mr. Fantastic, we get our fourth reveal. We get Marie Rambeau from Captain Marvel as the new Captain Marvel in this MCU. I guess Brie Larson didn't go up in that universe, and she did, and she became friends with the Kree, and all that kind of stuff happened, and now she's the Captain Marvel on Earth. That was a nice little throwback.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And I think it's a fun way to play into the multiverse aspect of this whole movie.
Yeah, and it's a really easy way just to throw an actor in, and like, you just built a backstory out of her.
Yeah.
Everyone who sees her there knows that this is exactly how the events transpired to get her into that chair. You don't have to explain anything.
This answers the what if question left from the original Captain Marvel. Here she is as Captain Marvel. Here's what it looks like.
Yeah. And then we get my favorite reveal out of the Illuminati. We get Patrick Stewart rolling out in the yellow chair.
Just not missing a beat at all.
No. And the little, as he's rolling out and you see that chair appear and you get the little 1997 X-Men theme. Well done, Mr. Raimi.
Just a nice looking shot all around.
So while they're down there scolding Doctor Strange, Wanda's showing up and she's fucking shit up upstairs. So the Illuminati all disappears upstairs to go fight Wanda. Like, Wanda, we got this. I don't understand how they don't know that Wanda's the most powerful being in, like, maybe the Wanda in their universe just, like, never really did. did anything. She was like, I'm just going to have some kids and hang around and I'll use my powers to, like, I don't know, clean the house every once in a while or get something off a top shelf, you know.
Not for evil.
Yeah, it seems kind of like a huge mistake on their part for how powerful they're supposed to be to not even have the tiniest knowing of her.
Well, the thing is, in the Marvel universe, there's things called Omega level threat mutants. And Wanda's one of them because of her reality bending powers. Iceman can literally, like, freeze every single molecule of moisture around the world simultaneously and completely kill the world. And you would think that the Illuminati of this world would be well versed and have files, not just like showing up to yell at somebody in a basement. Like, where's the research? Where's the PowerPoint presentations that are getting updated monthly about threats to the multiverse?
Well, they all know that the multiverse, like, exists because they aren't confused when Doctor Strange is there. So, yeah, I don't know. They missed that memo.
Yeah, well, it was a missed opportunity for some intel because when they get upstairs, they just get absolutely ravaged. And this is another fun Raimi, very Raimi scene because you get a lot of, like, gore aspects. You've got Mr. Fantastic just getting spaghettified.
Mamma mia. Poor Jim.
Slim Jim. Captain Carter gets cut in half with her own shield.
We're getting more brutality than I really can recall in Marvel, and I'm here for it. This is what Marvel's been missing for a long time, in my opinion.
One of my couple favorite scenes is also in this with, what's his name? The guy that doesn't talk?
Black Bolt.
Black Bolt. So whenever they kind of, like, show Black Bolt's, like, him killing the other Doctor Strange and stuff, you know? But then Wanda takes away his mouth, and then he, like, yells himself to death. That blew my mind. No, I can't even say that.
And his too.
I loved it. Just the no mouth thing. And then he goes to talk and just, like, a piece of his head just, like, pops out and deflates.
It was wild.
Honestly, the most, like, visceral death that we see in this movie to me. Like, it's not like a super bloody, gory scene, but the fact that they were like, yeah, we'll go that far. Do your thing, Raimi. Respect.
Yeah. And then Captain Marvel, she's, like, the last bastion after that. And they kind of have, like, a laser fight as standoff.
Yeah.
And Captain Marvel gets gone.
And crushed. So my one question with all of these characters arriving and suddenly disappearing, this is the multiverse. Anything can happen. These people can obviously come back in different universes. Do you think our good friend John Krasinski, is this a fan service moment? Is this testing the waters?
Okay, so I think a lot of this, including the fact that after all this happens, Patrick Stewart in his yellow chair comes out and gets mind neck broken and killed as well.
A little mind fucking.
There was a couple of things in this movie that fans were clamoring over for years. Jim as Mr. Fantastic. Patrick Stewart in the yellow chair. And I felt that it was kind of, I don't know if it was a Raimi thing or if it was a Disney MCU thing. I think it was them just saying, fuck you, stop telling us what to do. Let us make movies. Oh, you want to see your favorite things? Dead.
Wow.
That's what you get. Stop asking us for shit on the internet.
Well, and that's why I ask, because it kind of feels like... maybe moving forward with the Fantastic Four, assuming that's where we go, it's going to be a different person now. I kind of agree with your point on this. People have been wanting and shouting for so long, and if someone was nagging you outside your window every night saying, hey, give me this. What are you doing up there? Your ideas suck. You'd be like, shut the fuck up. And you had this moment in this movie, and yeah, fuck you.
That's what I felt. I felt it was a big, like, but a fun fuck you. Not a mean fuck you, but we know what we're doing. Stop.
And for that reason, I'm not mad about it, because that moment alone almost is better than if I were to get those characters in the long run. You know, we've seen Patrick Stewart forever. This fan service moment felt great. I would like John Krasinski to move on as Mr. Fantastic going forward, but I don't know if I could shake the Jim persona. So if this is the last time we see it too, hey, that's okay.
We got it. We got a little snapshot. It's not a Photoshop picture anymore.
And it makes, like, surprising, like, fans with stuff during the movies a lot easier if they're like, no, shut the fuck up. Like, let us surprise you.
Yeah, I guess that's a good point. It's not much of a surprise if you just give what people are asking for. I mean, in a sense it is, but it's not as fun.
Yeah, what do you want for your birthday? Oh, here's what you got for your birthday.
It's, yeah.
There's nothing fun with that.
Dang.
You got to think about what they would want. You can't give them exactly what they're asking for.
What do they need that they don't know that they need? And I trust them with that. That's okay.
But the dis- dispatching of all of these people in full Sam Raimi fashion. The next scene was a very Sam Raimi scene also, and it's probably one of my just favorite visual scenes of the entire movie, was Wanda kind of just like walking out of the smoke. You see that head of the sentry robot fly out, crush, and all the oil dripping out of it. And then out of the smoke walks Wanda, and she's just full carry, covered in oil. Yep. Ooh, that looked good. Very Raimi.
That's exactly what I thought the whole time. Is this Wanda or is this Carrie?
Yeah, well, and at that point, it's just like, well, fuck, I'm kind of scared. It kind of seemed like she was walking through the screen. Like, it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't see it in 3D.
That would also be a mindfuck.
So Wanda's walking up. She's poised to get to America and finally fucking get it done. And over in the actual universe where Wanda exists, one of the monks that didn't get killed goes up and stabs the Necronomicon and kills the Necronomicon and ends the spell that she's doing, the dreamwalking. And this girl, like, just melts into ash and great, again, very Raimi-looking scene.
The fact that he lingers on it and you get her one tear over all that grimy muck that she's become.
Yeah, so they've got a little bit of time to recoup. Doctor Strange gets to America Chavez. So Wanda gets sucked back into her universe and she threatens Wong. She's going to kill the last four survivors unless he gives her the location of the evil tower that has the original inscription from the Necronomicon. And I don't know, Wong, you're the Sorcerer Supreme. I got to like question your decision making here. You're going to give Wanda access to the book that you just finally dissolved. She can't do anything now. She can't dreamwalk. She can't go through the multiverse. You've solved it. It's done. She can fucking kill people, yeah, on your world, but she can't go after America anymore, which is what we're trying to do here. The only thing standing between that is the four people hanging in the balance. I'm sorry, like trolley problem, yo.
The rest of your people are already dead. What's four more at this point to save the universe?
You don't give her the location of the backup copy of the Necronomicon after you finally destroyed the first copy of the Necronomicon.
Guys, this is Disney. Our heroes are heroes. They have good hearts. He's not going to give his people up, although he should have.
Probably should have, because they just end up going and getting the Necronomicon, and then you find out that there's some prophecy with Wanda where the Scarlet Witch was going to come to bring all destruction and hell on all multiverses, whatever. There's an inscription of her. Really cool staging, really cool scenes. Her floating over the table with the book and all the red orbs and the image of her behind it. Very Raimi. Yeah. Really, really well shot.
I thought it looked really cool, and I thought it was really visually good, but I thought the story part of that was like really, really weak. I feel like they didn't, I don't know, maybe you had to know more than I did, but it wasn't like super explained well. It was just like, oh, I guess this temple is yours, and that was it.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot of missed pieces that had to move around or be added behind that didn't really make sense because of the way things had to reschedule after the COVID of it all. I didn't feel that it was a big hindrance to the movie. I didn't see a lot of it, but I would like to see the original like story and cut and where this was supposed to do and what it was supposed to be.
No, I 100% agree, because for as much as I really like Wanda as the main villain, I was never emotionally connected, and that's, I feel like, where most of the heart in the movie was her relationship with her, the kid she's, you know, longing and chasing for. And it definitely felt choppy at times. There's definitely some stuff that maybe would have made things a lot more impactful, I think.
If the movie had dropped closer to the release of WandaVision, closer to the last episode, when it was still fresh on people's minds, that last couple episodes, the grief that's involved in that, I'm sure that would have been a lot more impactful as well. But again, the COVID of it all kind of fucked everything up, and so you end up with a mediocre Marvel movie. But at least this one has an excuse, where Thor the Dark World does not.
Amen to that, shoot.
So Wanda's got her powers back. She ends up going back into through the multiverse and getting a hold of America and dragging her back through so that she can do the sacrifice on the altar again. Very Raimi, very fun, very mystic.
He loves very devilish things.
And during that same time, Doctor Strange and Rachel McAdams are kicked over to another half-collapsing universe that's kind of like crashed into another multiverse and everything. It kind of cool scenery again.
Very, you know, like dystopian kind of feel to it.
Yeah, floating cars and little tiny tornadoes. And
like the water coming up and the bridge and stuff was cool.
Yeah, but they're stuck in this universe. How am I going to get back? Oh, let's find another Doctor Strange, because that's what you do. So they go to find another Doctor Strange, and they find the one that's kind of like in charge of this universe who couldn't save it from collapsing. He's kind of like sad Strange and a little crazy Strange.
He's the Nick Cage Strange up at the top of the hill.
I was really hoping, as he was walking down those stairs, when I saw him in the window, in the Sanctum window, you didn't notice, John, but I looked at you and I just stared at you the entire time, like trying to like one last shot. force this to happen.
Then you can clearly tell how stuck in the scene I was, because when we talked about this situation in one of the last two Cage casts we did, when we talked about him kind of being at the top of a hill, that is what I visualized at the top of a fucking mansion at this creepy old window. And I had a moment where I was like, had it happened, I probably would have just jumped into your lap, I think.
That fucking close. You manifested everything around him, but it is just Benedict Cumberbatch in an old sad person makeup. So they have a little fight. Good Benedict Cumberbatch wins and throws him out a window and he gets impaled. Raimi
all over it.
But so good Doctor Strange from 616 ends up using that dude's copy of the Necronomicon to kind of, because he needs to get back to his universe somehow. Mm-hmm. He needs to get a message back at least. So he uses the other dude's copy of the Necronomicon to dreamwalk into the corpse that he had buried of himself earlier.
Ponytail Strange.
And we get something. The last 10 minutes of this movie has just got Sam Raimi just smeared all over it, and in the best way possible. Because you get Deadeye Doctor Strange. You get Benedict Cumberbatch under a bunch of makeup pretending to be a zombie with jagged walks, and then you get him fighting a bunch of souls. Damned souls.
That, like,
five of them.
Come out of him.
That come out of his eyes and his heart, and he's fighting, and then he turns him into a giant cape.
What?
And all the hands are grabbing at him. There was so much Raimi. Just, it was beautiful.
That whole sequence of him battling the demons and then turning him into the cape, that was my other favorite scene. Like, my goodness. Why couldn't the rest of this movie be this way?
It was like watching like a Spawn, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah,
the way that he
yeah.
the cape was moving and floating and everything, it was like his take on Spawn, and it was just so dark. And it's like somehow the MCU ended up in a Sam Raimi movie. It's not like Sam Raimi ended up directing an MCU movie at this point.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, it's almost like how with Taika Waititi, like his movies, you can tell that it's his movies in Marvel, you know. I feel like it's very similar to this.
Yeah, and Marvel didn't used to give him that kind of leeway. Spider-Man 2, they gave him a couple of little scenes where mm-hmm. he could play around a little bit, but this is not something someone wrote for Sam Raimi. This is something that Sam Raimi, like, there weren't storyboards of this pre-Raimi that were in people's heads.
No, not at Disney, no.
No, this is definitely his fingerprints everywhere. With, like I said, with a little Marvel input and Disney input, but in the strong points of this movie, he gets to shine as a director. I'm so thankful for that.
Yeah, so you get the big battle between Doctor Strange and Wanda, the Soul Cape coming into play, ripping her to shreds, and it's...
There's just one thing, though. One thought I had once we have this zombie Strange, when he's talking to America Chavez. I mean, there's a little bit of Michael Douglas in there.
There's a lot of bit of Michael Douglas in there.
The whole monologue from the side of the mouth.
I loved that they let Sam Raimi put Benedict Cumberbatch in Deadeye makeup and give the motivational speech at the end of the movie. Like, Sam Raimi, you know he pushed for that.
Oh, 100%.
He was like, can I leave him in the makeup? Sam, really, like, it's a pivotal scene, man. You can't... No. I think it'll be really good if I leave him in the makeup and we just let the shot sit on him for the majority of it. We don't need to see her reaction. No, let's appreciate the zombie makeup. That was my Sam Raimi impression.
I haven't heard him talk it so long, but I'm going to assume it's probably pretty good.
I've never heard him talk, so I'll assume it's really good also.
And because the zombie words were so motivational, so moving, America Chavez stands up and harnesses her power.
She figured it out.
But she doesn't defeat Wanda. She shows her the error of her ways, because she takes her into the multiverse that they were in the New York utopian multiverse mm-hmm. or whatever, where the 616 Wanda possessed the other Wanda, and shows the reaction that the kids are having to the Scarlet Witch, mm-hmm. to the evil that she is, and how they're protecting their mother. That's their mom. You're not their mom. You're just terrorizing these poor children, and you will be terrorizing these poor children if you get my powers.
Just like everybody's been trying to tell her this whole fucking movie.
Sometimes you just gotta show it to somebody, though. Okay, so I know this scene was supposed to be like very like moving, like, you know, she's coming to terms with her grief and her loss, and she's seeing the error of her ways, and I know they won't be able to like heroize her after that, but it just felt like it didn't land because of the fact that she just went through and mass murdered people very graphically for the last hour and 45 minutes. I have no sympathy for her. I don't care that she feels bad now.
Yeah, I didn't feel bad for her either. Like, yeah, that part just didn't hit for me like emotionally at all. And I think the Scarlet Witch and Wanda, like, I think she's really cool, but like, I'm not emotionally involved, so I didn't care. And like you said earlier, maybe if this came out closer to WandaVision finishing, that would be changed, but with what we got, I don't.
Yeah, like we've said a couple times, I'm sure there's many factors as to why these moments, you know, didn't hit. But this is the scene in particular I had in mind when I was saying that I didn't have that emotional moment that I feel like I'm supposed to. And it's a sad moment, but man, it was just so deadpan the whole time. You can't root for somebody who's that much of a shithead throughout a movie, you know?
Yeah. So Wanda ends up destroying the hard copy of the Book of the Dead by pulling the tower onto her. America Chavez and everybody else escapes. Yada, yada, yada. Happy ending, Marvel Universe. Except for all the dead people.
R.I.P.
Hey, maybe they'll come back. Many other corpses came back.
And we get the final wrap-up scene of, oh, America Chavez is now one of the monks that's going to be working with Doctor Strange. And in subsequent movies, I'm assuming, she will be a presence, which, cool, I'm with it. Fun power.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what else they do, because does this mean anytime she's around, we're just always going to have multiverse stuff? Because that seems like a very like specific single movie thing. So is this just a thing going forward now?
Well, no, they put her in the monastery so they could put her up there so she's training until we need her again. You know what I mean? They'll pull her out when they need that character to pop into a movie.
Yeah.
Maybe they'll punch her way into the Spider-Verse or something.
Yeah, I could see that. The old ace in the hole.
And then we get our after credits where we get the reveal. So for the mid-credit break, we get Charlize Theron is now part of the MCU officially. She's playing kind of like a Doctor Strange mystical sorcerer supreme of the dark dimension. So I don't know why this is going on, but my thoughts are they said at the end of the movie that Wanda destroyed every version of the Necronomicon in every universe, in every multiverse. I've got a problem with that, because what if that book was being used for good somewhere? What if in the dark dimension, the Book of Ashanti is the book that the evil people use against the dark dimension dominion? You can't just kill it for everybody. Like, I understand you wanted to destroy the book in your universe, but you can't kill it in every universe. That's not cool.
Now you're just like the Illuminati. You didn't do your research. You didn't look into the other shit you should have looked into.
You gotta pay attention to the PowerPoints.
Well, I'm curious too, because Doctor Strange just like nonchalantly is like, okay, whatever you say. So it seems like he knows her and stuff too. So who knows what's going to happen with that?
Well, maybe he's got a little bit more insight when he opens up that third eye.
Yeah, I forgot about that again.
I hope he keeps it, honestly. I like the third eye.
Yeah, it was always a thing in the comic books, but it was kind of like the like translucent, you know what I mean? Like opening the mind's eye. It wasn't an actual physical eye. That's just Raimi. That's just a Raimi thing. He likes eyes.
Man, well, I was going to ask if it's just like a multiverse thing, because two multiverse movies in a row center around eyeballs.
No, Sam Raimi's got got a thing for eyes the same way Tarantino has a thing for feet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's in all of his movies. There's always close-up shots of eyes opening. It's a weird thing. It's a Raimi thing. Tick.
Well, we saw him take out a giant ball.
Yeah, well, there you go.
On in the movie.
Yeah, he's got a thing for eyes.
Bigger tick.
And then for the final end credit sequence, we got the best end credit scene ever, and that was Bruce Campbell finishing beating the shit out of himself for a couple of seconds.
And just saying, it's over.
See, and I'm not sure how to take that, because Bruce started working with Sam when they were like 17.
Yeah.
His first movies were Evil Dead movies with Sam, and it was all about that hand. It's all about that evil hand. And at the end of that scene, him saying his hand stops like beating the shit out of him, and him saying, oh, it's over. It feels kind of like a retirement message from Bruce Campbell to me, so I'm a little sad. I hope that's not the case. John, don't manifest that into reality.
I'm not.
You think it had alternative motives, like a bigger message?
Yeah, I think that was his send off, you know,
from just working with Sam, or just in general?
I think just in general. He's getting up there. And he still runs the convention circuit really hard. Like Bruce needs a break.
Yeah, I was gonna say he did look older than I think I expected in this movie. And yeah, there's no problem with hanging it up. You've done more than enough in your career.
You can put the tights up, buddy. Go sweet prince.
He gave us maybe the best final end credit Marvel scene ever, so that can be his legacy.
Yeah, and it wasn't a trailer for the first time since the last Marvel movie.
There you go.
God.
Well, and you typically don't remember these you know, post-credit scenes.
I'll always remember when Bruce told me it's done.
With those crazy eyes.
I'm gonna find that sound clip and I'm gonna put it on my oven. Or on my microwave as my little dinger. It's done.
Is it just one it's done, or is it just it's done, it's done,
it's done?
Over and over again.
Yeah, but it's over.
Oh, it's over.
You gotta have it like out on your TV, like when you turn it off, it just goes, instead of making the TV remote noise like da da, it goes, it's over.
Just somehow program that in between the like skip to next episode breaks on my streams.
Are you still watching?
Yeah, it's over. It's done.
I was kind of thinking like the end of my funeral. I know it sounds grim, but that's what I want my funeral to end on, is that specific specific clip.
Just a, instead of the picture of you next to the, like, with the roses and everything around it, it would just be like a moving GIF of Bruce Campbell just being like, it's over.
See, I kind of want a whole spectacle. I want like a projector screen to slowly descend, like
slowly with noises. Yes. Yeah.
You hear the old school sound, and then you haven't even turned the projector on. You gotta get that bitch fired up. I want it to be a long drawn out process. And then once we finally get the old Windows 98 up or whatever they're gonna be using.
Dun 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 dun.
I want that to be the clip.
All right. Well, that was Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness.
I wanted to say things were gonna get out of hand, but they never did.
No, I think it was very well in control. It was a very controlled descent. I would say that if it wasn't for Sam Raimi all over it, this probably wouldn't be a movie I'm gonna watch again unless I'm doing a marathon rewatch type thing. But because of the Raimi, I think I'm gonna give it another, I'm gonna watch it when it comes out on digital.
I'm sad we got no Portal moment. I'm fully giving up on that. I'm done after Spider-Man and this movie now, and it not happening. No.
Hey, the Mr. Fantastic was a big Portal moment. It just didn't pan out as well. Spaghetti pan.
Yeah. What can you do though?
All right, well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. Coming up next, we're actually going to be taking like about a week, take a little tolerance break, get back into it. So week after next, we're going to be watching straight to stream Chippendale's Rescue Rangers.
Should be a fun one. Pretty excited.
I'm actually really excited for this. I think it's going to be a doozy.
Yeah, love me some Lonely Island, love me some Mulaney, love me some Sandberg, fucking all in. It's going to be a great one. We also might be having a little special guest on that episode. We're still working on scheduling, but we'll see about that. But if you want to find out if that special guest will be showing up,
make sure to follow us on Instagram at thcinemapodcast. Go follow us on TikTok and Twitter at thcinemapodcast. If you haven't already, give us a rate and review on Spotify or Apple. And yeah.
All right. Well, if you see three people that actually got to the movie 15 fucking minutes before the previews this time, but we're somehow still really, really high, come over and say hi. That might just be us. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Where is your third eye?
Make sure to follow him I know you both probably already know this, but I just now realized this or noticed it. Is that so? There's Benedict Cumberbatch, but then there's Benedict Wong also. How did they find two Benedicts to be in one movie? I've never even heard of a single other Benedict. Like, wow. They found two of them.
They need to find a third one so we can get a Benedict trifecta.
Wow. Get all the eggs Benedict in a little Marvel bun. Fry it up real nice.
No, make eggs Benedict with your three Benedicts.
I don't eat eggs. This is not a normal food for me.
Well, you can't make an omelet without cracking Benedicts.
Thank you for having my back instead of attacking me about my egg knowledge.